In this podcast episode, we want to introduce you to our BCEN friend, Angela Atwood. Come along as Michael Dexter and Holly Briggs talk with Angie about her career. She'll talk about how she went from taking an EMT class to educating thousands of transport and flight clinicians. Angie has taken every experience as an opportunity to grow into the highly effective professional she is today. This episode is called Starting with the End in Mind.
Hello, and welcome to the BCN and Friends podcast, where we hold interesting conversations about learning with a range of thought leaders, BCN certification holders, and industry professionals. But most importantly, to create value and insight for you, our professional nurses across the emergency spectrum. We hope you find our discussions interesting, informative, sometimes funny, sometimes serious, and always valuable. I'm Holly Briggs, a professional development specialist at BCEN and one of your hosts for today. I'm joined by my co-host, Michael Dexter, Director of Professional Development at BCEN. Hi, Michael.
Hello, Holly.
It's great to have you with us. And in this episode of BCEN and Friends, we have Angela Atwood. Angela's career is marked by her commitment to excellence and education in both pre-hospital, transport, and emergency nursing. She keeps a full schedule of work, volunteerism, and content creation. Michael, could you please introduce us to our BCEN friend, Angela?
Yeah, I would be happy to. Angela Atwood is a registered nurse that has over 25 years of experience in multiple environments, ground, air, hospital, caring for many, many critical patients. And she's served in roles ranging from paramedic, firefighter, ER nurse, flight nurse, and director of education. She has her master's degree in nursing leadership and management, as well as her CFRN, and is a certified flight paramedic with her FPC. Her current role includes clinical content creation, serving as a subject matter expert, an adjunct lecturer, and commission on accreditation for hospital continuing education program director. She also volunteers as a certification item writer and is on the Air Surface Transport Nurses Association Education Committee. So Angie, welcome to the BCN and Friends podcast. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. That was a wonderful intro. I feel so special now.
You are so special. You are.
Well, I just feel truly honored to be sitting down with some fellow long-term ER nurses and just kind of talking about things that interest people and kind of how we all became the people that we've grown into. So I'm never going to forget this experience. So I really, really thank you both for having me.
Well, we're excited to talk to you. And, you know, you've done a lot. You've worked, as I said, you know, in pre-hospital environments, firefighter, paramedic, a nurse, and different things. But what really drove you into the medical career in general? And then I guess from there, tell us a little bit about why you became a nurse and if the goal was always to be a flight nurse or if that's where you ended up.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So my story really began in 1996. So I was living in Fayetteville, North Carolina. My ex-husband was airborne paratrooper in the Army. So we were stationed at Fort Bragg, and that's where my son was born. And as a normal toddler would, he liked to run around with a lot of, you know, food in his mouth. And I just remember being terrified that one of these times he was going to choke on something and I wasn't going to know what to do. So I decided to look for some training and then go out and just get some basic first aid class type CPR choking education so that I could handle anything that would come about like that. And I just happened to stumble upon a basic EMT course that the local community college was putting on. And so I decided to enroll, and it was about a 3-month class. And I think we met a couple times a week. And I just really, really loved learning all about the disease processes and anatomy and physiology and injuries, and then how to provide care and treatment for those injuries. I did my ride-alongs with a fantastic local fire department, and I got hooked, right? I wanted to work in the pre-hospital environment, and I knew pretty instantly that that was going to be my purpose, my calling. And at the same time, I was driven to learn whatever I could so that I could become the provider that people could count on in those high-pressure, chaotic pre-hospital type situations. So shortly after I got my basic EMT, I went to medic school because medics were the cool kids that could perform all the advanced skills and intubate and do cryos and read EKGs, and they could administer all of the medications. And I wanted to be able to do all of that. So I didn't have to be in EMS very long to realize or understand that air medical transport was to pre-hospital what Top Gun was to the Navy, right? Like that was the pinnacle, top of the food chain, best of the best, the ultimate test where all your training and your skills and your fortitude really made all the difference. So it became my dream job probably within the first year. And I really was a sponge, just soaking up any tips, tricks, lessons, pearls of wisdom, things people had learned along the way. And I was fortunate enough to cross paths with a lot of very, very good seasoned paramedics, doctors, nurses that I respected and admired. So, and it was actually funny, in the beginning, I had no desire to be a nurse, right? So I loved the autonomy of EMS and the thrill of responding lights and sirens and working in those dynamic environments that are always changing. And this is going to sound terrible, but this is honestly the truth. I thought to myself, why would anybody want to be a nurse? Because to me, it looked like all they did was wipe butts and take orders all day, right? And I definitely didn't want to do that. So it didn't look very glamorous or, you know, anything like that. And obviously, at the time, I was clueless to what nurses really did in the hospital setting. It was just me kind of giving handoff and transferring patient care and those kind of things. And, you know, a lot of times EMS gets asked, you know, maybe why did you do this? Or why couldn't you have done this before you got here? Or, and sometimes that would create a little bit of tension between the two, EMS and nurses, but we grow up in very, very different environments. And I don't think either side has a real solid understanding about the skills or the challenges the other one endures, right? Because how could you if you've never lived in that environment? So a few years later, I actually decided to go to the dark side and get my nursing license. Because again, it didn't take me long to realize that the nursing profession had so much more to offer, right? Especially when it came to compensation and opportunity for professional growth. And in my mind, I said, you know, I'll just work in the ER because that's where I can still get my adrenaline fix and still work in that dynamic emergency environment and still have the opportunity to interact with my peeps, right? With other EMS professionals. I didn't have much difficulty securing a position in the ER after graduation. And even though the ER didn't really offer me the same level of chaos and challenges as pre-hospital, it most certainly inspired a much deeper understanding and appreciation of what higher level of care meant, right? So I was definitely confident I could keep people alive, but now I needed better assessment skills and better communication skills and more critical thinking skills. I had to learn lab values and team dynamics and anticipate the needs of the doc. And you have those critical patients for a lot longer. So it's definitely a different challenge. And I loved it. Again, I didn't have a clear understanding of what nurses did until I started working in the ER. And then I made it my mission to kind of improve that working relationship between EMS and ER staff, right? Because if you have a little bit of understanding of the challenges the other side goes through, then it's only going to make things better. So, but that's kind of how I got my start into nursing. And it was actually kind of funny because when I first started in the ER, I went through this huge IV slump where I could not get a line in anybody. And normally I was a rock star with hard sticks, especially in the EMS environment. So I figured out because the approach EMS to nursing is so different. And as a medic, you kind of grow up starting IVs in a moving ambulance or on the ground or in a weird contorted position or low light situation. So that's just kind of what you get used to. And I'll never forget the ER nurse that trained me. She was so sweet. She would get all of her supplies together, and we had those metal kind of rolling tables that you could roll your supplies next to the bed with, and she would sit down on the little round rolling stool, and then, you know, she's going to take her time and look at all the different sites for veins and whatnot. And obviously this wasn't a critical patient, but yeah, I could not do that. I could not sit down and do anything kind of methodically and systematically like that. So a huge IV slump. So definitely slapped me down. I lost a lot of confidence in that aspect. But yeah, I had to be standing at least to start an IV. And I found my love was definitely night shift, right? Night shifters are just a different breed of ER nurse. Yeah. So yeah, night shift was kind of my second home in the ER for the next 7 years. And I absolutely loved it. I found out I was pretty good at training up new ER nurse hires. And I loved mentoring nursing students. And then that is probably where my passion for teaching was born. Some years later, in about 2013, my rural hospital that I worked in signed a transport contract with Guardian Flight. And I thought, sweet, I applied for one of the open flight nurse positions, and I got my dream job on that helicopter. And it really meant a lot to me because that helicopter was stationed at the helicopter pad outside my hospital where I had worked in the ER for so many years. So I kind of got the best of both worlds. I still got to work with all of my ER people. I got to interact with my EMS people. It was my dream job for sure. Like anything else, once you reach a goal that you have set for yourself, I don't know what it is about us humans, but for some reason, we're never satisfied for very long, right? So pretty soon it was like, well, what else can I do to better myself and move up in my career? And I went back to school and started working on my master's degree. And then shortly after that, about 2018, I became the director of education. So a year after that, Global Medical Response acquired Guardian Flight. And I don't know if you guys know, but Global Medical Response is comprised of the largest ground medical transport company, AMR, and then five air medical transport companies. And one of them was Guardian Flight. The footprint is massive. I think the last time I saw the numbers, we had nearly 37,000 people as the workforce. And over 20,000 of those people are clinicians, anywhere from EMTs, basics to critical care flight personnel, 8,000 ground ambulances, over 300 rotor wing bases, over 123 fixed wing assets. So it's just massive. And during the integration, as they were trying to pull all of the brilliant minds from all of the companies and getting us together and trying to figure out what the best fit for certain people were, I got the opportunity to get to know Lori Burns, who's the vice president of Global Medical Response Learning. And I had the opportunity to join that GMR National Learning Team. And again, I've just been so fortunate to cross paths and collaborate with some of the best peoples in the industry. And it's kind of the history.
Thank you, Angie, for taking us on that journey with you. And I think it's cool how it started as you just wanting to be the best parent and to be able to keep your kids safe. And then that turned into you now educating hundreds of clinicians for a huge medical transport company. I mean, that is progress on such a large scale from what you kind of started off and your goal to now. And I think maybe this question is kind of a lob, but I will say you're someone who is in education, who is all about creating content for continuing education. But why do you believe, and in your experience, why is it so vital within the transport and flight industry to continually grow your knowledge and decrease any gaps you have in knowledge? Why is it so important?
No, I love that question. I'm glad you asked it. And, you know, I've always had a passion for learning, and I call myself kind of a forever student of life, right? I always just want to learn more about anything and everything, really. And I think clinical education and then also continuing education, that's really the cornerstone of nursing clinical excellence, right? So gaining knowledge drives the development of essential skills, which then drives the exploration of learning advanced concepts. And that's going to result in more confidence necessary for that nurse to provide that excellent care in any environment, right? So both ground and air and pre-hospital transport environments. So one thing that I learned very quick is, even though I was a pretty seasoned ER nurse, when you start flying, it's extraordinarily overwhelming. And you feel like you have enough experience to be confident in your clinical ability, but you don't fully grasp the challenges of what it means to take care of that patient in the air environment. So it's pretty normal for about the first year that you're flying that every little noise that helicopter makes or creak or squeak or whatever, you automatically think like, is that okay? Is that normal? Because you're just so on edge because it's so foreign to you. And one of the biggest struggles that I found, especially for nurses coming into air medical, is they're coming from an environment where they didn't have a lot of autonomy to now they have the most autonomy and responsibility that they've ever had. But now they have the least amount of resources they've ever had too. And if you've never worked pre-hospital, you don't know what it is to take care of a patient with just one other person, right? Like in the ER or in-house, we're used to having maybe a respiratory therapist and radiology and lab there and all those things. And we kind of take it for granted when all those people aren't there anymore. And congratulations, now you're all these people, you know, during that transport. So it's very, very stressful. And now you have a pilot also who you have to take into consideration. And you have to do all of this in the cockpit or the cabin that's about the size of a mid-sized SUV, if you're lucky, right? Some helicopters are bigger than others, but I worked on the smallest one, which is an A-STAR. And you have all of your critical care equipment, medications, and your job is to get that unstable patient from point A to point B, right? But you also have to be able to know aviation terms and safety regulations and weather limitations. And now we're flying at night and I got a helmet on. I got heavy night vision goggles and I can't see anything. And you can't turn on a light because then your pilot can't see. So all of this stuff, it's almost like drinking from a fire hose for the first year. Most of the people love the challenge and they really rise to the expectations, but it is, I didn't even like to call it a learning curve. It was more like a learning wall and you had to learn how to get up and over that wall. But yeah, that's education's huge, right? Especially because when you want to really be performing interventions that have been researched and are the evidence-based standards of care. When I'm developing continuing education or onboarding in education, again, I'm really fortunate I get to collaborate with a lot of subject matter experts, and then I get to develop and design the clinical content for a variety of platforms. It can be live in-person training or a virtual webinar or for the online catalog that we have, which is Cornerstone. And we just really find the best way to meet the educational needs of the adult learner, which is very challenging in the world we live in today, because again, average attention span for most people is about 15 to 20 minutes, right? If they're not engaged, then they're going to start scrolling or daydreaming or kind of the thing we all do when we really don't have a lot of investment in what's being taught, or it's something that we've had to learn and take every year, like annual type of education. It can get real boring and stagnant. So like I said, my purpose has just been to see how I can give it a little bit of snazzy new look maybe, or a new feel, or bring it in a different way that somebody who's been doing it a long time is not used to really increase their engagement.
I wanted to ask you a little bit more about education, because as you know, that's all the things that I do is education. And obviously it's important to educate the nurses, the medics, the EMTs, the different ones that are working with the patients. But another major component of EMS services in particular is community education and the ability to impact the community, whether it's teaching a CPR class or just explaining the benefits of pre-hospital care or some of the services that HEMS companies offer. So for you in particular, what is your role in assisting with community education and how do you help that part of it, not just clinician education?
So my role is I'm part of a team that builds the content for a large outreach education library that we have. And basically it lets our ground and air transport teams provide kind of that value, that valuable evidence-based clinical or operational education that also has CE attached, right? Either CAPC for EMS or ANCC for nurses. And it also, more importantly, allows them to go out into the community that they're serving and really build and foster those working relationships with other EMS agencies and the hospitals in that community that they serve. And through those relationships is when more community opportunity opens up. Maybe they can be part of a health fair or festival type thing where now maybe we're bringing an ambulance or a helicopter and we're kind of showing people what it is we do and how we do it so they have a little bit better understanding. And so the resource library is something we're pretty passionate about. We make sure it contains both basic and advanced level provider content so those transport teams can really go out and customize that outreach education based on the needs of the communities that they serve.
So Angie, thank you so much for explaining that. And it's amazing to have a resource library that connects your EMS providers and nurses and this team that you have in order for them to turn around and give education targeted to the community that they're serving and maybe the problems that they see facing as they're doing transports and recognizing like, hey, there's a gap here, but we can help to fill that gap. And I think that's awesome. I think community education is huge. And I mean, truthfully, you're a product of that, right? Like you started out wanting to learn basic CPR and wanting to get more education as a parent. And look where you are now. Now you're making those connections for other people. And I think it's just such a full circle moment. So I will also say that we appreciate you volunteering and doing work for us and partnering with BCN for exam item writing. I know that you've done that a few different times for us for the CFRN, the CTRN. But really, my question to you is, why did you get involved? Why do you stay involved in professional development that's even outside of your workplace? Because I know you stay pretty busy with just what's on your plate from work, right? But you take it that next step and you're volunteering your time outside of work to further the professional development of others. So why do you do that?
Thanks. Yeah, that's another great question. I'm extremely fortunate that the leadership that I work with not only encourages us to seek out professional development opportunities, but they give us tremendous support so that we're able to still do that in conjunction with our normal work duties on the GMR National Learning Team. And I first started, of course, when you build clinical content, that has to have some kind of measurement of if the student or the participant learner learned anything. So that usually comes in the form of a multiple choice test. So just building the GMR in-house clinical content for the online modules is where, you know, I started really getting into writing test questions. And I got an email from BCEN and they were looking for an item writer. And I'm like, wow, that seems like a great opportunity to kind of increase my knowledge and learn how to write better items. Just like you both, I'm sure, I love finding unique people in the nursing profession and learning about their success and kind of how they evolved their career over the years. And this was just another way to meet more nurses from different areas, you know, all over the United States. And what I found out is a lot of us have really similar stories, right? We have really similar reasons for starting down the path that we're on. And usually it's because we believe we can add some kind of value to the systems we work in, or like I said, maybe enhance some annual education content or find a simpler way to explain a complex concept to a nursing student or a new hire. But one of the best parts about item writing for me was they pair you with a mentor. And these mentors are part of the review committee that ultimately decides if the certification test itself will include the question that you developed. And they really work with you and guide you through the process, and they give feedback and suggestions. And it's just a positive kind of symbiotic relationship and collaboration. And it really ensures that the final version of that test question really assesses the test taker's knowledge and their decision-making process. And that's very hard to do. For anybody who's never written an item for a certification test, a good item takes about an hour to create. Like, it has to meet certain grammar structure, and the incorrect answers have to be plausible, but 100% incorrect. So you really have to verify a lot of things to get it to that level to be on a certification test. Some of the reviewers for BCEN, I mean, they're clinical powerhouses in the industry, right? So people like Sue Perigin, Nisa Hathaway, Alan Wolf, these are all reviewers that I've had the opportunity to work with and learn from. So I'm super grateful for that. And they're not just clinical leaders, but a lot of them are trailblazers, and they really role model how nurses can elevate the industry through that endless pursuit of professional development. So through item writing, what's kind of grown into, okay, well, let me see if I can get on the ASNA Education Committee, right? So I'm like, woohoo, I made it onto that committee. Now what can I learn from these fantastic and phenomenal nurses? So just get super excited about meeting other nurses who kind of have the same path and drive that I have.
You mentioned a few people that you have worked with at BCN, of course, the Education Committee with ASNA. But one question we like to ask every single person on this podcast is if there's a certain person or a moment in your career that really impacted you, really changed what you did. So whether it's working with some of these great people or whether it's a patient care situation or anything else that you look back and go, that really changed my trajectory or my focus. Is there anything in particular that really meant a lot to you in terms of your career?
Yeah, thinking back to even when I got started in paramedic school, it was actually a nurse that taught and coordinated my paramedic program. And that was at Glendale Community College here in Phoenix, Arizona. And her name was Pat Hensley. And so she was really the first and most influential nurse mentor that kind of laid the foundation for my career. And I'll be forever grateful to her because she really modeled the epitome of what nursing professionalism looked like. And she also set very high academic and clinical excellence standards, but she still provided a very dynamic and supportive learning atmosphere. And I was just hoping, you know, one day in my career, if I could be as polished and as knowledgeable and, you know, as formidable as she was in, because she was dealing with EMS, you know, medics and EMTs and firefighters. But she just did a fantastic job. And yeah, I'll always be grateful.
Yeah, I think that's important that we become like that as well for others that are following in and lay a pathway for others. But it's good to know that there were people that did it for you and did it for me and for Holly. And it's also good to know that we're continuing to push that on for others, for more generations of nurses. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, of course. Like I said, I've crossed paths with so many remarkable people and it's impossible to name drop them all. But I think everybody that I've had the opportunity to work with on anything has influenced me in some way and how I do things. I think you can always pick up at least one thing from all the people that we work with or collaborate with. So,
I agree. We're like puzzles and we pick up pieces here and there to kind of help make connections and I think help grow our footprint in our profession. And yeah, it's amazing. Some people come into your life for a period of time, but their purpose was exactly when you needed them to be there. And they help to make you the person you are today. So it's always cool. I love that question and I love hearing about it. So thank you for sharing that with us. Now I do get to ask some rapid fire questions. So if there was a career outside of healthcare that you'd like to try, what would it be?
Oh my gosh, you guys are going to laugh. I always wanted to be an astronaut. So I was even a nerd when I was in elementary school and I'd spend the summers with my grandmother. And, you know, long before we had all this technology and laptops and electronic books and whatnot, all you had was encyclopedias, right? And she had like this set of encyclopedias. And I would spend time writing like little essays or papers on the different planets and learning about nebulas and all this kind of nerdy stuff. And I remember my cousins used to always make fun of me. But yeah, I wanted to be an astronaut. Like, I don't know, space exploration and all of this, that stuff just really fascinated me. But when I first started taking college classes, right after high school, I actually took an aeronautical engineering class. And it was the most boring thing I ever sat through in my life. I actually got a D out of that class. And I just wasn't interested in it. So obviously I didn't do well, but that's just not the way that my brain ended up working. So I wasn't meant to be an astronaut or aeronautical engineer, but it sure looked interesting when I was a kid growing up. Plus we had all the cool shuttle launches and things like that to watch, all of the things that had to do with space.
I'll be honest with you. Like I would do the whole astronaut thing if I could skip like the whole engineering, understanding the pressure, like if I could skip all of that and just go to the part where like we get to fly in space and hop around and like no gravity, I'm down. But if I have to learn all of that, I'd be right there with you in your aeronautical engineering class. I would have probably lowered the curve even lower. So, all right, three categories, just of favorites. What's your favorite book? It can be all time or it can just be something you're reading now that you'd recommend.
Ooh, you know, that is a hard question. So I think nonfiction, I would have to go with probably The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, right? That Stephen Covey book that's been around forever. Cause I just think it's really a transformative guide for personal and professional success. So I always recommend that one to people. And then fiction, I love Jack Carr. So he's a retired Navy SEAL. And if you guys saw the Terminal List on Amazon Prime, that came off his books. And his books are just so well-written and so detailed. He's a fabulous author. So I really enjoy his books.
Some great recommendations. Thank you. All right. Favorite movie, TV show, or it can just be like a binge-worthy series. Any of those or all of those will do.
Gosh, you guys ask such difficult questions. So favorite movie, I would have to say up there would be Braveheart. It's kind of older one. And I think for series, binge-worthy, I loved Game of Thrones. So I guess I'm really drawn to things where there's a love story, there's some kind of courage, heroism, and you got loyalty and betrayal. You kind of have everything all wrapped into one. So those are the kind of the things that I guess draw me in.
Oh yeah. I like characters, conflicts. Some of them have like really good like character arches where you think they're one way, you know, like the bad guy, but then halfway through the series, they turn out to make a good decision and they start to make like that turn. And you get sucked into the story and you want to find out And then when it ends, you're like mad about it. So
exactly.
That's usually where I end up. I'm like, what do you mean? This is the end. So I feel that. Favorite musical artist?
Oh, I listen to pretty much all genres, but I would think probably Pink. So the thing that I love the most about Pink is she's just unapologetically herself, right? She's a little bit edgy. She's got that distinctive raspy voice, and she strikes me as a person who's always pushing her own limits. Mm-hmm. And by pushing those limits, she's really become a powerhouse female pop music icon. And I actually went to one of her concerts, and I was just amazed by kind of all of the acrobatics, and she puts on a phenomenal show. But there's so many great artists out there. I think, you know, music's really powerful. It really inspires us when we need it, you know? So yeah, I'd go with Pink. I think her and I would be good friends.
I would like to sit in on that conversation. I have seen her in concert as well. And I was just like you, amazed, not only her like acrobatic skills, but her vocal arrangements. I was like, this is crazy. She's jumping around and singing. Like, this is insane that you can have, that you can just be so talented. But then her music and just her lyrics and the way that she questions things, the way she reflects on things, there's just really, it is, it's powerful. And I think exactly what you said, music has such a way of bringing people into a moment with that artist, and you can feel what they're feeling. It's very tied to emotion. So great recommendations. All right. Hobbies, or what is like your self-care go-to? Like, what helps you reset, Angie?
So I think for me, I'm really outdoorsy. So I feel the most grounded when I'm outdoors. So it could be hiking, camping, mountain biking, paddle boarding. I love to snowboard. I'm not that great, but I still love to do it. But yeah, anything outdoors where you can just, you know, kind of decompress and get away from the hustle bustle of, you know, city life or things like that. You're listening to the wind blowing through the trees, or, you know, the water trickling down a creek, and it's just gorgeous. And maybe you're lucky and you get to see, you know, a beautiful sunset or some animals out there. And yeah, I just feel the most connected, definitely hanging out, doing outdoorsy things.
Well, that's fun. And I am more of an indoorsy person, or I'm like a domesticated person for sure. So don't get me too far out in the woods. However, even as someone who is self-described as more indoorsy, I will say there is something about just hearing nature, seeing nature, and being absorbed in what is happening around you. I think especially in current technology driven, and there's just everything is so at your fingertips, literally in your hand. And to know that the world is just so much bigger than that, so much bigger than the screen in front of my face, it definitely has a way of bringing me back, resetting me, putting me kind of in the space where I belong. So I'll give that to you. And my husband loves the outdoors. I am like a tolerator of it mostly, but maybe it'll grow on me. Who knows? So if our audience would like to follow you online, what social media platforms are they on? What could they follow you on?
Yeah, so I do have social media. I'm not the greatest at looking at that every day and whatnot, because I'm a lot like you. I like to unplug and not have that in my face, especially when you sit at a desk and look at a computer for most of the day, most of the week and whatnot. So, but I do have Instagram, and I believe you can find me under my name, just Angie Atwood. But my Instagram name is Spartan, and it's got an underscore and then Fit Nurse. I find a lot of just really pleasure in running Spartan races. For Facebook, it's just under my name, Angie Atwood. And then my LinkedIn is under Angela Atwood. And then I think it includes MSN, CFRN, FPC as well. But yeah, that's where people can find me.
Well, thank you for that. And I will have that posted on the blog for this episode.
Well, Angie, thank you so much for sharing everything with us and talking about your career and some of the many things that you're involved in. I think it's always inspiring to hear from other people that are working hard and trying to better themselves, better the profession, and shine a light on all of the different opportunities out there for emergency nurses. So thank you for doing all of that today and allowing us to know you more.
Well, again, thank you so much for having me. It's Like I said, I feel like I've gained so much from the profession. Now I'm in a stage where my focus is really how can I give back? How can I make the path a little bit easier, open more doors for the new nurses who are just starting out? And it means a lot to me because, again, from all the people who gave all of those fantastic things to me as I was coming up.
Well, I want to take this time to thank Angie for joining us for this episode of BCN and Friends. Thank you, Angie, for sharing your expertise, your insight, your passion for nursing with us. You are definitely creating an impact through education and challenging others to raise their professional practice through knowledge. We appreciate all that you have done and all that you continue to do. And to all of our listeners, we hope you will stay tuned as we continue with BCN and Friends and bring you new, meaningful content and perspectives. If you have a suggestion for an episode, please email us at bcn@bcn.org. I'm Holly Briggs here with Michael Dexter, and on behalf of the entire BCN team, we thank and celebrate you for all that you're doing as professional nurses across the emergency spectrum. Until next time, we are out.